Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia dealers of Ireland. Wherever the next 7 years bring you, Kia are with you all the way.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Colm Lopez. Colm, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you, buddy?
Good, thanks. What's today like for you, Colm?
Well, today, like for me, is like sticking pins in a sore.
Why?
Why? Because so far from my understanding, this is an investigation to some homes.
Yeah.
Why these places were ever called homes, I can never understand.
It's called the Commission of Investigation into Mother and Baby Homes and Certain Related Matters.
Yeah.
And you were in Bessborough.
I was. And I was one of the lucky ones.
In what way?
I got out of the place. I was boarded out, as they called it.
How did you get into the place, Colm?
My mother, in 1948, had a baby, which was a mortal sin as far as the state and the churches was concerned. And the idea that the state, that I have no time for the churches and what they did, but I have less time for what the state did by cooperating with them, paying them money, helping them to get illegal passports to sell children. The churches didn't give the money to the state. They kept it for themselves. So my solution to this problem would be a great solution, I think. All the land owned by the churches where these hell holes were built, all that land should be taken off the churches. No compensation to the churches whatsoever, right? And that would be them showing their... the only thing they worry about is cash. So that would hurt them. And then they'd feel some bit of pain. And as far as the state and apology is concerned, I won't know if I can accept an apology until I get a chance to look at this report.
Okay.
And the idea that the Taoiseach can do what was done before, pay lip service by standing up tomorrow and pretending to apologise on behalf of the state.
And why do you say pretend, Colm? Why are you...
Because unless he stands up first and says this was a crime committed against women and children, unless he stands up and says, I am sorry, and the state is sorry for every child that cried for years in a cot where nobody checked them to see, turn them over. Yeah. Nobody take the pain away.
Yeah.
Because, as I said, I'm lucky. I got away. But the idea that I would let my child cry for days and even die in its cot at night. I see wild animal programs on the television and they take care of them, one another.
Yeah.
But we as a society decided that us bastards, as we were called, as I was called all my life until I just laughed at people who said it to me. That's what we're talking about. And over the years, there's been various things said about, we'll do this and we'll do that. But they never did anything. So unless, as far as I'm concerned anyway, maybe a week or so, when we all get a chance to have a look at this report, he stands up then and says, yes, the state is guilty and the church is guilty. And because the church is guilty, we're taking all the land off them in compensation. And the state will invest in every child that managed to escape from those places or ran away from those places or adopted out. Every one of them, for all the years they spent in there, will be compensated.
Now, you mentioned church and state responsibility, but what about, do you know your mother's own story, Colm, as to how she ended up in Bessborough?
I do. I know the story, and in fairness, so she's dead and gone now. Hmm. But in fairness to her and relations, I would not go into great detail. But I would just say that I met her afterwards, and it's just, I know people today, let's say, that I met 3 or 4 years, that I'd be closer to than I was to my actual mother. Hmm. Now, that, in my opinion, was the fault of the state and the church. And now, I'm not talking about any one particular church now, because they were both, the holy Christian churches, where they forgot about what Jesus said to love the children. They only saw them as a way of making money. They ran laundries and worked the women to death. Some of the, and they died in there. They let the children die. They say 9,000. I'd say there's a lot more, because I know personally of at least, well, one, maybe three, who jumped into the Lee, because they got more comfort from cold water of the Lee than they ever got from the state and the church.
Yeah.
In their death.
And Colm, you said you managed to get away. What age were you when you left Bessborough?
About four, I think. Was it? Yeah. Okay. About four. Three and a half, four.
And where did you go?
I was not adopted.
Boarded
out is what they called it.
Yeah.
And there was a wonderful woman working for Cork County Council whose name I won't mention because she was a rotten bitch.
Oh, God.
But she worked for Cork County. I remember going into her at 16 years of age and asking for my birth certificate. And she's sitting there behind her big desk telling me, "No, you're not entitled to it. You're illegitimate. You're not entitled to that." And I had spoke to a friend afterwards, and there was a very good solicitor in Cork called Mr. Goldberg. And they told me, "What you do now, Colm, don't bother going down and annoying the man first, but go up and tell her that you're going to make an appointment with Mr. Goldberg to get your birth certificate."
Yeah.
And the minute I mentioned his name, the shriveling face of her shriveled up even more.
Okay.
That was the state. She was working for the state.
The state, okay, good point.
She was only doing the job.
You weren't.
Yeah. We were it. We weren't people. We weren't babies. We weren't women. We weren't anything. We were just it. Just little bastards running around the place, bringing shame on the holy of Ireland.
And you know what? I know you want to maintain your mother and her family's privacy, but do you have any memories of your mother from being a young child?
No, I have one. Would you believe I have a very strange memory, and I have a photograph of myself as a very young child on a tricycle.
Yeah.
And I could never get an explanation for it. In fairness to her, like somebody turning up, 20 odd years later, was a bit of a shock to her system, you know. And I have no empathy with the woman because the state decided I shouldn't.
Okay.
Because I was a bastard. I know some people have been offended now with me saying that word.
Yeah.
But I lived with that word for 16, 18 years. So I was said to my face on numerous occasions, and that I was an it was another thing they used to use.
An it.
I wasn't even human.
Did you give evidence to the Mother and Baby Homes Commission?
I didn't, because I tell you, as you can imagine from the way I speak and the way I go on, I had the impression, and I don't know whether I'll be proved right or not, but I think the most part of this was they may admit that something happened.
Oh, they will. They have to. But they have to.
They'll give excuses. I heard a Taoiseach a minute ago. You haven't heard this, but I heard a Taoiseach. I was listening partly to this thing, and the Taoiseach was speaking, and he said the society was wrong at the time.
Well, what do you think of that point?
That's a load of crap.
Why?
Why? Because, one, the state is supposed to protect all people equally. Two, the churches are supposed to believe in God.
Mm.
Right? And where in, I don't know where, what religion, what, where in the Bible, and I have read a bit of it, it says thou shalt treat babies bought out of wedlock and lock them up and put them in prison. Yeah. I didn't see that anywhere in the way. Jesus said you must love all the children.
Yes, of course. But was there?
But they didn't.
I don't know if you want to go down this angle from what you said earlier, Colm. But is there any way your mother's family could have kept her, so to speak?
No, you couldn't. Shame. Oh my God, okay. Shame of it all.
Colm, you didn't tell me. You need to explain to me. Why again? Elaborate as to why you didn't feel you wanted to. Like the commission this afternoon, I presume a lot of the 3,000 pages will be the written testimony of people that we've heard incredible, moving, honest, courageous stories over the last 20, 25 years on Liveline and other programmes. But why did you decide not to go forward? Which you're entitled to do, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I know. The reason I didn't go forward is that the commission, in my opinion, was not investigating. Unless it proves me wrong now when I read it.
Hmm.
It wasn't investigating the crime.
And it didn't.
Crimes were committed. It should be it should have been called a criminal investigation into the actions of the state and the churches over 50, 60 years. Like, it was still going on up until 1980.
I know.
Jesus.
Early 1990s in one case.
Yeah, still going on. And there are probably some people still around the place blessing themselves as their daughter got pregnant. Instead of being delighted to being a grandparent.
Yeah.
And accepting a gift from, as they're supposed to be Christians. So it's a gift from God. A baby is a gift from God.
So when you read the headlines tomorrow in the papers, which will be no doubt quotes from the commission, and there'll be phrases like shameful, like a prison.
Like a prison, I'd be delighted. Because I've always left it at
But people were treated shamefully. Will that help?
Shame?
You?
No. People weren't treated. No. Do you know, like, you say something wrong and you say, oh, God, I'm ashamed of myself for saying something wrong.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's grand. Or the person, the man that kicks his dog and says, oh, my God, my poor dog, I didn't mean to do that. You know, and what do you do with the dog when you kick it? Do you immediately pick it up and say, oh, you poor little thing, I'm so sorry.
And you pet the dog,
Yeah, you do. What did we do? We threw them into cots and let them cry themselves to sleep.
Okay. And
every time it comes out, it hurts. Now, if it doesn't hurt as much, in the sense that it's like raking over a fire. You're seeing the embers again.
Yeah.
And you feel the embers again. And I know that there are thousands out there that feel that.
And when you say, like, you won't be happy until something is done, that it's more than words, and you say one of the things that should be done is, and the church in the main, a lot of the institutions either reneged or didn't fulfil their obligations to the redress board for the institutions when they said they would pay up. And even the deal they did with the state at the time was miserly compared to what the state...
Well, that was the minister. The minister talked to the bishop before.
We've no evidence. But Colm, just stay with me for a sec. What do you want done with those lands that you say...
Well, That's an interesting question. I've spoken to one or two people about it, actually, and they're saying about taking back the land. And what would you do? Well, the first all of it, anyway, try and find all the dead bodies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And have have a proper funeral without any religious there. Keep all the religions out of it.
Right.
And have a commemoration stone put there, or not a statue, for God's sake, because God deserted us all. A stone there saying,
okay.
We the people of Ireland are sorry that we hated ye so much, but we respect you now.
Yeah. And Colm, you spoke about your early life and then being boarded out. And your life so far, how's it been in the overall?
I'm very lucky. I'm married. I have two beautiful daughters.
Right.
I have one daughter who's... I have one away. She works in Dublin, and I have one living in York. And I'm blessed with the two of them, and
well
I love them to bits, and they love their mother and their father very
well
much
done.
As well.
Well done.
And every child I meet, even on the street, I always smile at the child. I'll always make them feel important, because that's the one thing I never had, and my church and my state decided I was dirt. All us were eight things. Dirty little bastards. Why are you alive at all?
And Colm, have you grandchildren?
No.
Not yet. Okay. But
no,
I'm just
but no,
well, your children and your partner and vice versa, you're blessed with them, as you say, and they're what you say, you're very lucky. Colm Lopez, stay with us, Colm. I want to bring in Majella Minehan. Now people know Majella's name. And indeed her story, because of the fantastic book she wrote, and also the story that she told being in the guards and becoming pregnant, and she wasn't married. My God, even putting those words together sounds so odd. But anyway, so stupid. And Majella was hounded in the Gardaí. But Majella, you contacted us because you say you're just your reflections on the stories you've been hearing, and indeed your own story. Because you didn't end up. Now I know from your book you didn't. You ended up in a family home, did you not?
Good afternoon, Joe. Yeah. I did, and thank you very much. Lovely to speak to you. Joe, yeah, I did. I ended up with a family, but listening to your show over the last few days, I can honestly say, Joe, for me, that the family gave me light.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Okay.
In the darkness that I felt, and the humiliation and the shame that was inflicted on me, and that depression and that loneliness and isolation, the family that I went to in Galway, there was a beam. I saw a bit of light. And really what I saw, listening to Colm there, what I saw was that I mattered.
Mm.
And as a child, where I came from, an institution, I never mattered. I wasn't important. I was a nothing. But this family made me feel I was something. So that brought me, although through my darkness and my pain and my shame and my guilt and the fact that I had demoralised the Garda Force and I was an unmarried mother. And as Colm said, I brought a knit into the world, because that was the shame that the Catholic Church instilled on us. And to this day, still are. And this mother and baby home, I wasn't in a mother and baby home, but since I have done my documentary and since I did my book, Joe, the amount of people that have contacted me and the amount of stories that I have heard, I could write another book. And it is so sad. And the mother and baby's home to be leaked. The people that should have heard that first are the survivors.
But I remind people as well, Majella, that you were disciplined in the Gardaí for becoming pregnant in 1984.
That's correct. But Joe, I was disciplined for getting pregnant. Joe, this is the darkness. This is where the darkness lies. I was charged with giving birth. The most beautiful gift that any woman is bestowed upon any woman.
Yeah.
A and I was charged with it, and I was charged with a criminal charge. There is no justification for it, regardless of the fact that I've written a book, regardless of the fact I've spoken to many an interviewer. Nobody, nobody has ever come to me and said to me, I've had an apology from the Commissioner and the Minister of Justice and Honour. Nobody, Joe, ever came to me and said to me, Magella, we are so, so sorry for charging you with giving birth, because that is the most beautiful gift that has ever been bestowed upon me. That, to me, is the darkness of this country. And that, to me, is where the state and the church were constantly, constantly coercing, and still are.
And which is the juncture that column focuses on as well, the state and the church. What do you think should come of this report?
Joe, you know, I know a lot about it. I wasn't there, Joe. Yeah. So, but the one thing, and Colm said it there as well, Colm said it, I think of what I know about the mother and baby homes and the people that I've spoke to that were in them. Like industrial schools. I don't even think an apology is good enough.
Yeah.
First of all, find the babies. Find the bodies of children that were just thrown aside. Dirt. There's nothing that will ever help any mother or woman that was in a mother and baby home that their child was taken or their child died. Nothing, Joe. When my child was taken in the Galway Regional Hospital because I was told it was better for my child, how could I stand up as a 20-year-old vulnerable girl who knew that I was alone? Look at those poor mothers in the mother and baby home. They had nobody. I had nobody. We were on our own, Joe. We fought that system alone. We were used, we were abused, we were called names. I was called promiscuous, I was called a prostitute, I was called a slut. I was told I demoralised the Garda Force. I did none of that.
And
but
we've had,
I believed it all, Joe.
And we've had women over the years on this programme who spoke about giving birth in these mother and baby homes, and they were, those words were thrown at them as they were giving birth, Magella. As they were giving birth.
Joe, there is nothing that Irish society and state can do today to.
And what do you think of Colm's point that the church property hit the church financially? Insofar as I don't know what laws
well,
you'd have to.
Joe, they try that with redress for institutional abuse. They tried all of that. Did it work? No, Joe.
But they outwitted the government. They outwitted the government on the redress.
Well, of course they did. Of course they did. But like,
minister.
Okay,
but
don't.
But Joe, what happened?
Yeah.
Joe, what happened in relation to the institutional abuse? And this is going to the same thing if it happens with the mother and baby homes. They got us all to sign a waiver that we could never disclose what we got and we could never take charges against the perpetrators. Now, what is that doing? That is silencing us again.
Okay.
They're going to do the same thing, Joe. I'm sorry. They're going to do the very same thing, Joe. And they're going to silence the mothers that were in the mother and baby homes as well. I just, honest to God, Joe, I salute every child and mother and baby that was born in mother and baby homes. I stand by them. And I'm standing with them. Because we've a lot of shame in this country for what we've done to women and children.
Okay, Colm Lopez is still with us. Magella Moynihan is with us. Catherine Bulbulia before the break. Catherine, but people would know you, Catherine, from your public life as well as a senator and involved in the Progressive Democrats and indeed in politics over the years. Catherine, this stage of this conversation began, I think, 10 days ago in Liveline with the discussion about from a woman, Stephanie Walsh, who took in young women who were pregnant. You were in the same situation, Catherine. You took in young pregnant women. How did that come about, Catherine?
Good afternoon,
good
Joe.
Afternoon.
I'm listening to this conversation today, yesterday, and so forth. It's like a dam has burst. It's just quite extraordinary what you are hearing. How I came across it was I became aware of Father Fergal, a Dominican priest.
Fergal O'Connor,
yeah. Wonderful man, yeah. Who set up an organization called Ally,
yeah.
Which I suppose means a friend, a confidant, yeah. A supporter. And I think he must have known about the horrors in the mother and baby homes. And he had a viable alternative in mm-hmm. that he wished to contact families who would be willing on a non-transactional basis. I mean, there was no money that was part and parcel of this, who would be willing to give a home to, befriend, support a young pregnant or an older pregnant person. And I had a debate within myself as to whether in doing something like this I was colluding in the secrecy and, you know, the general climate of opinion. But in any event, supported by my husband, we went and spoke to Father Fergal O'Connor, and over a period of about 8 years or so, I had some 10 young women with me. And I obviously respected then the anonymity of the situation, because that was their chief concern. That's why they left their homes and their families and sought shelter and support. I also think that Father O'Connor had some inkling of what was going on, because part of the assurance that he needed was that these young people would be sent to the local general practitioner, or choose a general practitioner, and that they would deliver their babies in a proper maternity unit. And so with all of my women, that's what was the situation. And they were from a variety of backgrounds. Some were supported by their families very well indeed. Some were not. I reviewed the situation when I knew I was invited on your program, and out of six standout young people, five had their babies adopted and one kept her child.
And what was, just on that angle, Catherine, of the role of the families, were the families so cowed by church and state, and in every shape, including in the local parish priest or the local GP or the local politician or whatever, that they were so cowed by them that they felt they had no option, that the shame was too great, as Colm says?
I believe so. Reputation came into it a great deal. The notion that their girl would be in some way disregarded, felt that she was playing fast and loose with society's rules and norms, and that she was in some way disgracing the family. Now, I do remember in the case of one particular person, her father died suddenly in the last month of her pregnancy.
Okay.
He dropped dead. And there was a huge discussion as to whether she should forego all the anonymity of the preceding 9 months and go to the funeral, or whether she shouldn't. And this debate raged in the midst of their grief. You know, they had this additional problem. They made a decision that she should stay with us and not appear at the funeral. Now, I don't know whether subsequently that presented her with a huge sort of post-traumatic.
And do you remember where she was on the morning of the funeral?
I most certainly do. We had a telephone in the hall, as you did in those days.
Yeah.
And she there was a call, we answered it, and it was her family. And they briefed me in advance that they had this dreadful news and that they needed to speak to her.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, look, would you like me to talk to her first? And then maybe you'd call again. And, you know, I'm actually with her and face to face with her, and I might be able to make it a little bit easier. So I did that, and then they called again. And obviously she was in bits. And there were several phone calls that, you know...
And who decided she should not attend?
She did. She did. Oh, yes, she absolutely did. And I said to the family, look, this situation is one that you're facing this grief today, but there will be grief down the line, and you must make sure that it is so-and-so who decides on the course of action to take. And immediately after the funeral, the family all came to our house and from some distance, and we set up hospitality and so on, and we left them to grieve with their daughter.
Good God.
Desperate stuff. And I also have, you know, some of these memories are standout ones. I remember one beautiful girl. I still have a patchwork quilt that she made for us as a parting gesture, and I treasure it. And her baby was adopted, and I was to take the baby to Dublin. And I went to the maternity hospital where she still was. She was adamant that this was her course of action. And the baby was beautifully dressed and wrapped in a lovely shawl, which she was a very talented person, and she had made all these lovely garments for the baby. And I looked down at the little baby, and his face was wet. And I said, oh, my goodness, what's happened here? And then I looked at my friend, and she had tears rolling down her cheeks, and they were on the face of the baby. So, I mean, the pain and the distress and the agony of this can't be underestimated and can't be airbrushed.
Yeah. Colm, you want? I hear you want to come in there in the background.
I was just saying, is there any chance we could go back to the discussion we were having about the mother and baby home?
And why do you not? Why do you not like hearing other angles of it, Colm?
Because we're all for every. You see, that's part of the problem.
Well, let me put one thing to you, Colm, and I respect what you say. What do you think of that girl, that young woman, deciding herself not to go to her dad's funeral?
Because the shame of turning up pregnant at your father's funeral, the shame that the neighbours will put on it, that the priest would probably say you can't come into the graveyard.
But could the... Could the family, Catherine, were you minded to say, I'm bringing you to that funeral?
No, I wasn't. Okay. I wasn't.
Why not?
Well, Colm, this wasn't my decision to make. This wasn't my family. This was, a family unit that had its own dynamic, that had to make its own decisions in that context.
So
and I'm just talking...
So you were working for the family? You weren't... taking it to, you weren't putting her first. You
first
were putting the family first,
okay.
Is it?
First of all, I wasn't working for anybody, Colm. I was befriending somebody who had a tremendous difficulty in the context, the moral climate, the attitude of the time. And I don't think that we can judge what happened then too neatly with the standards of today. It was different. Not good different, bad different.
It was different than my foot. It was disgraceful, and it should never have been.
Of course, it was. You're right.
Should never have been allowed, and any church or state that allowed it was wrong. And that people who, even in their good intentions, went along with it, is worse.
But the children, I won't go down that road. We won't compare and contrast because.
This was an alternative, Joe.
Yeah, that's...
A much better alternative that was humane and decent and kind and loving. And I think good came out of it.
Who set it up, this organisation?
A highly progressive, liberal, Dominican priest, Father Fergal O'Connor, who was very, very respected and was acting within the context of the time, which is what he had to do. He couldn't push himself forward into the 2020s.
Okay. And, Colm, can I just...
He could have come into the 1950s, surely, or 60s.
Yeah, okay. Say with us, Catherine and Colm and Helen and Magella Meinhan are there, as well as lots of other people who want to participate. Joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joe at RT.ie. I'm talking to, among others, Colm Lopez, who contacted us. Born in Bessborough, he was adopted, boarded out, as he said, and he's now in the good, and has many good years in his life. He said, I'm very lucky with my wife and my two wonderful daughters. Just finally, Colm, a couple of things struck me from what you say, which is your point that this should be more than words, and that the church, the institution, should be made pay in form of handing, or you say confiscating their lands, whatever the complications of that. But the other thing that struck me, I don't know if you actually said this, but you definitely put it into my head, which could be my fault, that the 1950s and the 1960s, 1970s, the 1950s, 1954, Colm, you might remember it, it was the marrying year in Ireland, and that led all across the country, they're still there, to many public statues of Our Lady, okay? Public statues, and they're at roundabouts and at the side of the road and at the Bull Wall and everywhere else. The Bull Wall one wasn't erected in 1972. What do you think should happen to those public manifestations of one particular religion?
When I think of the Virgin Mary, I always think it's very funny. I think because people have glorifying a mother, and at the same time being in Holy Ireland, we were throwing them into jail, into slavery houses where they were worked to death. Where was the respect for mothers there, I wonder? To me, it looked like hypocrisy. If you ask me about these statues.
And the grottos, the statues, shrines, grottos everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere, all over the place. And the church getting these put up all over the place. It's like slapping your boat in one side of the face and then turn the other side and get another slap. Yeah. Hypocrites. Basically, it's hypocrisy.
Okay.
They can't respect a mother. You say you respect mothers when you respect the mother of Jesus, right?
Mm.
Now, I won't go down the road of what happened on RT. That's another people's business. Mm. But I'll tell you that, I don't know, it's more of the hypocrites, Ireland being a place of being a hypocrite. Because there's no... There's people... The church that locked up mothers and babies has no respect for the Virgin Mary.
Okay.
If they say they have, they're being hypocrites.
Okay. Colm, stay with us if you wish. I want to talk to Helen. Helen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And your story, if you can, Helen, please.
I was adopted at the age of 6 months, and I think I was in Temple Hill.
In Blackrock in Dublin, yeah?
Yeah. And I think I was fostered for a while before the adoption. But I tried to, when both my adopted parents died, and I was only in my 20s at that time.
Right.
So they would have been quite old when they adopted me. Mm. So when I tried to trace my mother, I tried twice, and she refused to meet me. But my reason for coming on the program this afternoon is to ask the question, where are all the men? Where are all the fathers?
Yeah.
Why are they so silent? Like, do they not want to know what happened to their children? Mm-hmm. Or do they not want to contact them? Or have they no love for these children?
Yeah. And have you any memories of your early childhood, Helen?
No. Before, well, when I see that photograph of all the cots in the room and the babies crying, that breaks my heart, because I feel the first 6 months of a baby's life is so important, important, and it puts down a marker for the rest of your life. So I always ask myself, was I the baby who smiled up at people to get attention, or was I the one who cried over and over and over again and was left crying?
Yeah.
And I know it has affected my life, and I know that... I know I have three, I think it's two half-brothers and a half-sister out there somewhere.
Okay.
And I'd love to meet them. I have no roots. I have absolutely no roots in my life. I'm not grounded. Never have been. And I feel I'm just a tumbleweed going through life with nothing to ground myself.
And when you say ground and tumbleweed, roots?
Yeah, but it's very important to have.
Yeah, I know.
Very important to know where you came from, you know, your clan, your group, your whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and there is no, apart from my own children, there is no soft place to land for me.
Yeah. And what are you hoping for from this report? And
I don't think anything is going to come from
the apology tomorrow. And
I don't think there's going to be anything, you know. I was adopted in the 50s, late 50s, and at that time children were given away like toys and Kellogg's cornflakes boxes. That's all I can say. I know there was very little checks done.
Yeah.
when I was adopted, and I think maybe a letter from the local PP or something.
Well,
here you are, you have a child.
And children were taken to the States, to the United States of America.
Oh yeah, yeah, I could be anywhere. I could be anywhere. So, and a lot of people will say I was very lucky that I was adopted. But both my parents were very heavy drinkers, and my mother was especially violent when mm-hmm. she was drunk. And, like, nobody cared where these babies went or who they went to.
Terry, stay with us, Helen. Terry Harrison. Terry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And I know you were on with us a number of years ago, Terry, but you were at
I
this.
Was.
And your story was so courageous, and you were going. It was a particular juncture for you in your life in terms of talking about what happened to you. You were at the webinar, as it's called, that's going
yes.
on at the minute.
It's going on now, yeah.
And how's it going?
Very bad, Joe. Very bad.
Why?
The way they're presenting it and the way they're interpreting Judge Murphy's report, it's almost like they're sanitising it, if that's the right word.
Mm.
Everything has been carefully said. And it's not... I've always wanted people to understand that when we were in these institutions, they were like the nearest thing to a prison camp. You were completely 100% at the mercy of the people who ran them.
Yeah.
There was no outside influence. There was no inspectors. There was nobody there when you needed people. Like when I was taken out of England and put on a plane, that priest was allowed to go right through customs with me. The police in Heathrow were all around mm. and nobody bat an eyelash because, you know, his whole attire spoke volumes of power. A higher power greater than any law of any land. And he was able to do that to me and put me on a plane, and it landed in Cork. And they brought me back to Ireland because they knew my baby would not be taken in England. And my parents didn't orchestrate that. My community... Nobody did, except the Catholic Crusade and Rescue Society did.
And it's a long time ago since you were on, but to recall for people, Terry, you told that incredible story where you had an accident, you ended up in hospital, they discovered in the UK, they discovered you were pregnant, they called in the Catholic... What was it called again?
Catholic Crusade and Rescue Society.
And they're the ones that said, oh, we get you back to Ireland. They got a priest. The priest went through customs, which you're on an Aer Lingus flight. And you're brought back and brought to Bessborough
in Cork. Yeah. Joe, I became invisible in the back of that car. It was a long drive to Heathrow Airport, but they spoke to each other like it was a lovely day.
Yeah, and you're an adult, a pregnant young woman.
18.
And Terry, what else has been said at the webinar? Is it the Taoiseach and the Minister for Children, Roderick O'Gorman, just the two of them?
Yeah.
And did they express upset, apology, distress? what are they saying about the report?
They're actually saying lots of nice things, Joe. Everything is coming across as very nice.
So but, then what? Well, the other debate then is about that the apology should be delayed until people read it.
Yeah.
What do you think of that argument now?
Well, I really sincerely believe that Enda said sorry, Bertie said sorry.
Yeah.
It's a very easy thing to do, Joe. There's no commitment in saying sorry. There's a huge definition of understanding, of forgiveness. If somebody said to me, can you forgive Ireland for what it done to you? That's hugely different to saying, Ireland's sorry for what they did to you. Huge. And I was hoping that this minister, this Taoiseach, sorry, Micheál Martin, over the years I've had tremendous meetings with him.
Yeah.
I was a part of the collaborative forum. And I've tried even with Minister O'Reilly in the terms of reference went for this commission. You know, in Article 9, it said we were in need of rehabilitation. We were in need of direction in order for us to be allowed to go back into the society. That was in Article 9 of the terms of reference going over to Judge Murphy.
And Terry, at which is the commission that's reporting today, but at the webinar, are you allowed to talk? Are you allowed to ask questions?
I will be now in a few minutes.
Okay.
But Joe, to be honest with you, I don't really have many questions for them today. As you said, and rightly so, I know that the report is chartered by chapter, by institution.
Mm. Okay.
So because I was in two different institutions, there's two chapters in that report. But we wrote most of that report.
Yeah,
every one of us that went to Bagot Street.
Yeah.
We were re-traumatised.
Where the commission was, yeah.
Yeah, and we were asked to leave. And sometimes a woman was handed a plastic card with a National Counselling outline on it. But as I said to Minister Riley at the time, you know, if you've been hit by a bus, will you have time to look for that plastic card and then look for your phone? You're in shock.
Okay.
There should have been an in-house counsellor at all times in Bagot Street. Joe, they're not treating us with any respect.
Okay.
The hope we wanted for today, most of the mothers in my group don't even know how to switch on a computer.
I understand that.
And unfortunately, over COVID, they had no other alternative.
So I understand that. But Terry, one of our earlier calls, you would have been in the webinar, Colm Lopez, who was in BESPR as well. He said that he wants more than words. He wants proper restitution from the church, especially in terms of property and land and finances. What do you think of that proposal?
I totally agree with him. I think what we've always wanted for this day, and I can't believe I live to see it, Joe, but I have, and I'm delighted to say that we will be acknowledged. We've always wanted to be acknowledged. What happened to us? What happened to our children? And possibly it's a ripple effect in families, Joe. It's carried on from generation to generation because it's not resolved. A conversation has begun, and I love transparency. I love openness. I don't go in fighting. I don't go in blaming. I want people to be able to, for instance, if I want to cry...
Yeah.
We live every day with our silent grief, every single day of our lives. And there was nowhere to express it. There was no empathy, no sympathy, because it was silent.
Yeah.
And I always call it the living bereavement, and most people don't understand it. Trained counsellors don't understand it.
Well, I think a lot of people can, even the phrase.
You're living with a loss that's continuous.
And Terry, the last time you spoke to me, you hadn't found your son. Has there been any change in that situation?
No, Joe.
Ah, okay.
No.
And what age would he be now, Terry?
He's 47, he'll be 48 this year.
Very young man, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, please
I never give up hope, Joe.
And don't. But when you say you're glad you live to see this day, it's because you campaigned and people all over the country campaigned. This day has come, remember. That is the first victory. It is because the likes of you, even though you were crushed down and your family, your children crushed down by society and the church and the state and the collaboration you had got that courage somewhere to campaign over the years. So remember that, and do not be hard on yourself today, Terry. Comfort from the fact that this incredible, whatever we think about the words of it, but it is an incredible document of 3,000 pages that will live long beyond us as a record. Yes. As a record, that's not enough. Maybe it's not enough of a time in Ireland. Terry, are you going to go back into the webinar now?
Yeah, I am going to go back into it. But, Joe, can I just say to all the women listening, because so many of the mothers listen to you, Joe, and I just want to say to all of them that I'm still here and I'm still going to go on. Yeah. And this is the beginning, I hope, of an open conversation where they can cry now and they can talk to people now and not be afraid anymore.
Okay.
And this is going to help them tremendously. And even myself and my own family, there's aunts and uncles that I had to tell. But most of all, my adult children and my grandchildren are going to know the truth, Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to learn the truth.
Yeah. Okay, Terry, go back in, because not is that webinar important, not just to you, but you are important for it as well, and your contribution over the years and what you've been through. Thanks indeed, Terry Harrison.
And Joe, can I say a huge thank you to you, because that day, all those years ago, on the phone on my lunch break from work, I felt wonderful after our call, and you allowed me to speak out for the first time ever.
Okay, well, that wonder is born within yourself, Terry, and it's manifesting your beautiful 47-year-old son, who I hope you will meet. That's Terry Harrison, who's going back into the webinar. Elizabeth has been at the webinar as well. Elizabeth, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And what's your impression so far of it?
Yeah,
it's been going on for over an hour.
Yeah, brilliant. I'm very, very impressed with it. Mm. I think he has covered a lot of the issues that have been raised.
Yeah.
My other one would be that I would like if the apology from our Prime Minister would be held back, because my mother is 101 years old and she's in a nursing home, and because of the COVID, we're not allowed indoor visits. Now, any time I go to visit her, she will say to me, "Do you remember that awful place in Pellistown?" And I just say, "I do remember a little bit of it, Mum," I said. Mm. But at the same time, we know we've moved on.
Yeah.
You've had 9 children. You've had a good life. But she said, that time, she said, I was in there, some terrible things happened.
Yeah.
And she starts crying, Joe.
Yeah,
I think on the other issue of the redress, I think that also should be considered on account of the hurt and the humiliation. She gave birth 3 days in labour, called for a doctor because nothing was happening. She was in a lot of discomfort and eventually tried to get out of the bed. She said, "I'm going to throw myself out the window if you don't get a doctor for me." Because in those days, they didn't have doctors. It was mostly midwives.
Yeah, yeah.
So eventually when the doctor was called and they found out what was wrong, it was a breech delivery, very, very difficult. And they said, "We need to baptize your child now. We hold no hope for her. Give her a name." The name was given, but here I am today, thankfully.
Yeah.
But at the same time, she went on to give great service there, because gastroenteritis broke out, and a lot of the mums there hadn't got enough breast milk to feed their babies. And my mother had a lot to feed, at least 2 more. So she acted as wet nurse, and I think for that she got great recognition.
Okay.
Yeah.
What an incredible woman.
An incredible woman, Joe. She's 101 now in February.
Okay.
And I just want to thank the wonderful care she's been given up there in St. Mary's in Phoenix Park.
Yeah, it's a great place.
And her geriatrician, Dr. McCarthy, has really given her great, great attention.
Okay.
And kept her well and has gotten her through COVID. She didn't actually contract COVID. She was tested negative 3 times. Yeah. So we think that she scares away COVID. She's got such a strong personality.
Great. Well, isn't it interesting, even that journey that she's made in her wonderful life with her wonderful family, Elizabeth, from, wasn't it St. Patrick's on the Navan Road where the baby was born, which is about half a mile to St. Mary's in the Phoenix Park. But that's where she's receiving good care and hospitable care. But that journey may be a mile, but it is 101 years. And let's hope that's as far back, though we know it's not, unfortunately, that's as far back as that cruelty goes in terms of the world we live in. Elizabeth, so you think the apology, you're at the webinar, you're clear the apology should be held back until they're able to say more than words. Until they're able to say there's a redress or there's going to be consequences for institutions that made money out of this or gain from this.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. Yeah, and before she dies, you know, that I can actually go through the whole report with her.
Brilliant.
Which would be, and then the understanding that she will understand what the apology is for.
Okay.
And thanks for letting us tell our story, Joe.
Okay.
You do a great job
That's our job, and it's a privilege. It's a privilege, and has been since the first call we got on this topic many, many years ago. Elizabeth, go safely. Kind regards to your mother, and you're going to go back into the webinar, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah,
indeed,
great,
Joe.
Great. Okay, thanks, Elizabeth. 51551, watch on.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Five.
And Joe Doherty thought we're talking to people who are at the webinar. I think it's due to finish very soon. With the Taoiseach and the Minister for Children about the Mother and Babies Investigation Commission, which it's a 3,000-page report. It's being published. What people are keen, as you heard from the beginning of the programme, survivors, is they don't just want an apology, they want action. It seemed to be. Now, Mary Donovan and Caroline Donovan are sisters. And your story, Mary, your mother's story, and indeed that's been mentioned earlier, does go down through generations. Your mother was in Bessborough.
That's right, Joe. Thank you very much for having me on the show. I just want to see, is my sister okay? Because we're in two different counties.
Okay, Caroline, are you okay?
I am, Joe. It's nice to be on your show.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes, Joe. Yes, Mom had two pregnancies in Bessborough. My brother, late brother David, was born in 1957 in Bessborough, mother and baby home, and was sent via the Good Shepherd Madeleine Laundry in Limerick. That's the address that was on entry into Bessborough. This where their same parents put them in. Well, with regard to our mother, that did not happen. Mm-hmm. Our mother had a very, very, very tough life. She was a beautiful soul. She was put into a reformatory school at the age of 16 in Limerick by court order and went from there into a psychiatric asylum in April 1956 for 4 or 5 months, and then was put back into the laundry. We don't know how she ended up being pregnant, but she gave birth to our brother David on the 4th of February 1957. And up to 4 weeks ago, the family are traumatised at the revelation that there was a second pregnancy in Bessborough in 1959 of twins, Anne Veronica and Vincent Joseph Finn. She had them at the age of 19. She had David at the age of 17. I also listened in on the web air, and they're saying the ages were from 18 up to 28. Well, sorry to say, I have my information. Mammy was 16 and a half when she got pregnant with our brother David, and she was 19 when she gave birth to twins prematurely. They're saying they passed away. I've tried 4 graveyards in Cork. There are no records of Anne Veronica and Vincent Joseph Finn buried in any of those places. So my question is, where are our twin siblings?
And Caroline, your own story, because you... You were born in Bessborough, is that correct, Caroline?
No. I was born in Tralee.
Okay. You
know, and I was actually in the residential institution here in Tralee.
Okay.
So was I.
And when I was there, I actually got pregnant at the age of 15 and a half.
Okay.
And I was thrown out of the building by the nuns because I was pregnant.
Right.
And I stayed with my family, but at the time, it was bad. So I went to my cousin, and I had my first child above in Marion Park in Tralee. And I was taken then to Old St. Catherine's in Tralee. And when I had her, the following day, the social worker and the sister that was the nun that was in charge of us in the institution came in, and I had to sign over my first daughter, and she was actually adopted from Bensborough.
Yeah. And then you had...
Then in 1984, I was back in Bensborough, and when we were there, we had to do the cleaning. I was actually sent out to a family as well where I had to clean for them and look after their children, but we never got paid. Yeah. It was from Monday to Friday, and then we had to go back. And then one day, I just got sick of it. We were stigmatised for, you had the well-to-do people that were treated, and these people, parents, did not know that their daughters were actually in this building, and these girls were actually sending letters to their parents that they were working abroad and everything. And when I got back that week, I just got up and I went down the road into the credit union, because it was down the road, the shops and everything were, and I walked out, and I didn't go back in there until 1990 again, when I had my daughter in 1991.
Okay. And you're...
And she was born in Bensborough. I was sent out to Finbar's Hospital. Okay. And I brought her back home.
And as you say, yourself and Mary, your twin, you're looking for another set of twins that were born, siblings, your brothers, Anne, Veronica and Vincent Joseph.
Yes.
Do you think they're still alive, Mary? Mary, do you think?
Well, I tell you, it all came to light, Joe, because Mom was a survivor of every one of the commissions. She was a survivor of the reformatory school, which we didn't know, so therefore she missed out on her redress. She was a survivor of the Madeleine laundries. She was also a survivor of the mother and baby homes. Okay. And she was in and out of St. Finian's Mental Hospital in Killarney for the 40, 50 years of our lives. We were all of our mother's children and our father, both parents were also survivors of the industrial schools. Our father was a survivor in St. Joseph's Tralee for 3 years. In 1947, he was 13. He spent 3 years. And Mom, like I said, at the age of 15. And all children within the marriage of the late James Donovan and Margaret Donovan were all put into the industrial schools. I was a year and 1 month, and then again I was put in at a year and a half in 1969, along with my sister Caroline and James.
So you don't know where Anne Veronica and Vincent Joseph are?
No, we don't know where they are.
They were born the 24th of March 1959. What about your other siblings, Mary and Caroline? You mentioned David, born 1957.
David died in 2015. Okay. He died of a heart attack. Martin died in 2016. He was 45. Martin was living a homeless life because he did not want to live in a home. Martin was 9 when I was 11. I came home from school to the industrial school, and my brother Martin was not anywhere to be seen. He was sent to St. Joseph's Ferry House, Clonmel, at the age of 9 till he was 18. And he died from a seizure in the homeless shelter in Galway in 2016.
Okay.
And it's been very, very hard on the family. Like I said, we're an intergenerational family of both parents being survivors of the industrial schools, and us ourselves being survivors of the industrial schools. It does cause a lot of mental health and trauma and triggers, but the twins' revelation only came to light 4 weeks ago through a report sent to a family solicitor regarding Mum's time in the Madeleine laundry. I was querying that she was in another one, and lo and behold, Tusla came back and revealed that there was a second pregnancy.
Okay.
I got the birth cert. I have the death cert. The death certs, Joe, were registered by an inmate of St. Finbar's, which I find very, very strange. And the death was registered on the 1st of April, when I have the birth certs weren't registered till the 4th of April. So it makes no sense. You have to register a birth before you register a death.
So they died, according to those records, they died before they were born.
And I have rang saying they died. They were born in Bessborough Mother and Baby Home. They were sent to St. Finbar's Hospital. I rang St. Finbar's Cemetery. There are no records of Veronica and Veronica and Vincent Joseph.
Okay.
I spoke to every one of them. Were gentlemen. They were had empathy towards me to find the location of our twin siblings.
Okay.
And right now, today, we don't know where they are.
Okay. Stay with us, Mary Donovan and Caroline Donovan.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We're talking to twin sisters Mary Donovan and Caroline Donovan. They were born in a home, an institution, as they say, but are now looking for... they discovered 4 weeks ago that they had twin siblings, Anne, Veronica and Vincent Joseph, born in Bessborough in March 1959. And they have death certs, but they're... annotated wrongly for some reason. Looks like the children died before they were born, which might tell us as a metaphor. Sharon Lawless. Sharon, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
Has the webinar finished?
Yeah, the webinar finished about maybe 20, 25 minutes ago.
And how did it go?
It went very well. I think that Minister O'Gorman laid out the plan. There's a 22-point action plan that's going to take place in starting now, and I think he laid that out very well. He highlighted the main points of the findings, but I think that the adoption community, for the most part, have been waiting for this for so long, knowing that it was going to be flawed. I mean, ultimately, it was going to be flawed because only 18 institutions were taken. And, I mean, that completely excluded St. Patrick's Guild, which was the biggest adoption agency in Ireland.
Yeah.
And as we know, it was announced by the government in 2018 that they had presided over hundreds of illegal adoptions. I mean, I think the original figure that was like 127, we know that there were a whole load more than that.
And after 22 points, the 22, are they statements, or are they actual? Did they talk about redress or?
Yeah. I mean, they're talking about redress primarily for women who spent more than 6 months in mother and baby homes, and they're talking about memorials. I think the biggest takeaway from it is, number one, recognition of what happened and an apology for what happened. They are talking about changing legislation, which really has been the bugbear of all of this for so long, that an adopted person cannot get information about who they are, which is outrageous. And I think because of a court case in 1998, you know, the judgment was that privacy superseded the right to an identity. And I think that really needs to be looked at, because, to be honest with you, Joe, if that isn't dealt with and if legislation isn't brought forward to give people access to find out who their mother is, I mean, when you think of it, not being able to find out who your mother is, there's no point in this investigation ever having taken place. Because if the result is just, okay, you know, recognition and, that's awful and we're very sorry about it, and, you know, for those who qualify, there might be compensation.
And is there any
that means nothing.
Any talk of sanctions on the church or?
Nothing.
Nothing about that, okay.
Nothing. And I think that really angers the adoption community. I mean, out of the thousands of people who went through mother and baby homes and other institutions who were able to point fingers and name names, there's nothing coming from the religious communities. There's nobody been held accountable. But as I said, by only concentrating on 18 institutions, there's no way that it could be a full investigation.
Okay. Thanks indeed for that. Sharon Lawless, who's an adoption rights campaigner and writer, Mary Donovan and Caroline Donovan, will come back again. 51551, Marshall.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Kindness to all the survivors of those institutions and homes. We're back tomorrow at 1:45. Rebecca Meehan produced, and Ray Darcy is next.